Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. A thrill to be here. We say that for a reason. In the studio with me, Julian Gioiello and Lisa Arnone, my associate. And we've been doing some research, trying to get to the bottom of a few things, trying to understand adolescence a little better. Here's a quote for you. The happiest marriage tends to be between people with great tolerance for boredom, because they're not looking for excitement necessarily. Leads us to a question about sensation seekers. Sensation seekers may crave new, exciting experiences because activities most people find pleasurable appear boring to them. So a 10-year study of this has been leading us to some places, so I put my two friends here on the task of understanding risk-taking behavior a little more, and let's get a report from Julian and Lisa. What do you see, guys?
Hey there, this is Julian. So we were doing some research, me and Lisa, and found a really interesting article about sort of where risk-taking came from. And, of course, we always go back to the beginnings of humans, the early humans, and why we evolved into these risk-taking kind of people.
So over the course of evolution of the human species, there have been risk-seekers and risk-avoiders. Now, risk-seeking is fueled by something that's called an endorphin, which is a hormone-like substance that the brain produces, usually in response to danger. So in prehistoric times, early risk takers were more likely to be the ones who would wander off of the confines of their safe haven to look for new sources of water or sources of food. They were more likely to take risks in terms of trying new things, new weapons or traps for animals, or even eating new plants. So that's the kind of the initial place where risk-taking became important for humans to be able to go forward, to be able to grow.
Let me understand that, Lisa. So what you're saying is, as humans developed in their intellect, there would be certain ones who would be the risk-takers, and so those were the ones who really kept the species alive because they were expansive, because they went out, they got more food, they went out and they got more property, more land, more girls.
Right? Yeah.
They went out, but what made them go out there, because it's so much nicer to play safe and stay home, well, what happened was they were given a gift of these endorphins, which are a pleasure-like feeling that goes along with the risk-taking. So when you take a risk, you get flooded by endorphins. Endorphins feel good, and there's a certain rush that goes along with risk-taking. That was what they had in order to get us to new places.
Right, and ironically, they, even though they took more risks, they were the people who generally survived, because the non-risk takers would die off because they weren't growing and expanding and forging new ways.
The rule of life is eat or be eaten.
Yes.
And if you stand still, somebody's going to come along and eat you.
Yeah, and then also this leads on towards the present, where humans continue to take unnecessary risks. So despite the virtual elimination of physical risk from our daily lives, being modern people with modern medicine and general safety, this basic trait, enhanced and even strengthened by the fact that many societies give risk-takers positive behavioral reinforcement. So we get positive
sports.
Reinforcement. Yeah, you have sports, you have race car drivers, astronauts. These are people that are glorified for their risk-taking.
So even though we don't have any reason to really, you know, to take risks, because we could live fairly securely with what we have now, some piece of us admires this. And not only admires it, but almost says it is necessary for survival.
I find it exciting vicariously, and the people who are doing it find it exciting, almost to the point of exhilarating. Some people describe it as almost as good as sex.
Is addiction, well, you know, it's kind of interesting. If sex becomes very available, But certain risks do not. I mean, what would most people choose? Would you rather jump out of an airplane or have sex if you have sex every day? Right? It's jump out of the airplane. Mm-hmm. Becomes a bigger thrill.
Right.
So one of the questions that we have is why there is so many adolescents who are dying from risk-taking behaviors. Most adolescents die from either suicide, from car accidents, any number of things that lead them.
You know, one thing comes to mind pretty recent in about the last 5 years. There was something called planking. And I know it was really popular among people around my age, where it was entirely done for risk taking. It was, you would just plank, which is to lay face down like a plank with your body straight on something. Originally it was a joke, but then it became to do it on the most dangerous thing possible. So people would do it on the edge of their terrace. They would do it on a car that's moving. They would do it on the top of a traffic light or something like this. And people would go out of their way. 20-year-olds, 16 to 25-year-olds who go out of their way to find places to do this in. And I feel like these sort of trends are becoming more and more common.
Well, it seems that adolescence is practically synonymous in our culture with risk-taking, with emotional drama, with all forms of outlandish behavior. So what's happened? Why it turns out that the brain circuit for processing fear, the amygdala, that part of our brain, is precocious and develops way ahead of the prefrontal cortex, which is the seat of reasoning and executive control. Get this now. So the amygdala, which is our excitatory part, develops first. After that comes this other part of our brain that develops, gets us to relax, to not take as many chances. So with adolescence, the seat of reasoning and executive control, which is in the other part of the brain, is not yet developed. So what they're filled with is this anxiety, this angst, this something that makes them want to jump, to leap, to go somewhere, to deal with something. You may wonder why, if adolescents have such enhanced capacity for anxiety, that they're such novelty seekers and risk takers. Two traits are at odds. The answer is that the brain's reward center, just like its fear circuit, matures earlier than the prefrontal cortex. So the brain is developing what? Of course, endorphins. Endorphins are developing along with the activity of the amygdala. So the amygdala is firing like crazy in us adolescents, we adolescents. And then we have endorphins going along giving us pleasure. Like, what teenager doesn't know what it's like to jump from building to building like we used to do when we were kids?
Yeah, I mean, I do that all the time. We go up to the roof and then hop to the next one, climb up to the other
right,
one.
Right, with a little... Right.
Right, jump off the fire escape into another fire escape, et cetera, et cetera.
See what that's like. Now, why? Why would we do such crazy things? Because our brain is telling us two things. Our brain is telling us, you know, get something that's going to thrill you. You have a lot of nervousness. Get something that's going to calm you down. And what's going to calm you down is the endorphins.
Is that a release?
Yeah.
But also our brain is not telling us that it's dangerous, that it's scary, that there's no, if the sense of reason is less developed, then we're not thinking about the consequences. And in adolescence, there's that
so
sense
what
of...
What you just said is kind of interesting. Our brain is telling us it's dangerous, but our brain does not tell us about consequences. Mm-hmm. Because the thrill is always for the now. How many of you have done thrills in the present that were not considerate of the consequence of the future, right? Many of you married folks. Many children were born this way, right? This is Armand DeMille with Lisa Arnone and Julian Joiello. We do have a phone number here, too. We take calls during our radio program, 212-957-2729. We want to hear about you and your attitude towards your own risk. So adolescents get caught between this, they have this undeveloped part of them, which is the prefrontal cortex. They don't have it, so parents try to represent it. So parents tell the adolescents, you have to be reasonable. You have to be, 'cause as if you could drive it into their head. Now, the only thing you can drive into their head is fear. The brain development lag has huge implications for how we think about anxiety and how we treat it. It suggests that anxious adolescents may not be very responsive to psychotherapy. You know, and so it's like they don't really want to talk about it. They are filled. Nobody understands that what's going on inside of them is a torture. Really. Really. Am I calling myself? Hold on a second. We do have a caller on the phone. Hi, is this Armand?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Armand. This is Armand.
Oh, that's nice. It's nice to talk to myself. You'll forgive me. This may be off topic, so I understand if you cut me off. But I was listening to your beginnings of your discussion, and there were so many things you said that I thought were off the wall that it's difficult for me to remember them all and address them. Just to begin with the risk takers, it's useful to a species to have risk takers. A certain number of the species have to be sacrificed in order to get things that help the rest. So you need a stable base, and then the risk takers go out, and they're the ones that find the saber-toothed tiger.
Now, let me ask you something, hold it. You said off the wall. Did we say exactly that?
No. Just my interpretation of it.
I know, but that was what we said. You said what we said was off the wall.
Yeah, so many things. Now, the what?
Not that thing, though. Because okay, we said the same thing you're saying.
Perhaps I should clarify or...
What happened?
Oh, we lost that call. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So yes, of course, we agree. I agree with him. That, you know, there is many things that we've said that must be off the wall. Go ahead.
Well, I think both having a teenager of my own and seeing teenagers that responding to the sense of invulnerability is really difficult. And the thing that I found that works the most in both cases is just to actually stand with them and take a look out at what it is that's going on, to kind of just be with them.
Because you know the way it feels to them, right?
Absolutely. Remember it vividly.
Most adults have different anxiety disorders, you know, and they have this kind of a path of stuff. But risk is such an exciting thing to so many people. Of course, most adolescents don't develop anxiety disorders, but acquire the skill to modulate their fear as they begin to develop into adulthood. And I guess you see it as you're bringing children up. You know, early on, do children know their consequences? Well, what about that? At age 5 and 6 and 7, it's like such a classic thing to see a child doing a behavior that they cannot, you know, they can't possibly imagine that it's dangerous, right?
Mm-hmm. They have no way of knowing except for your telling, but they're more likely to believe you, a little kid.
Because you're either going to get them with one of two things. You're either going to make them frightened of punishment, or you're going to give them nurturing. Right?
Yes.
One of my patients, a 32-year-old man, recalled feeling anxious in social gatherings as a teenager. He would say it was unpleasant even to speak with other people in the room. It wasn't that he disliked human company, rather socializing in groups felt dangerous, even though intellectually he knew that that wasn't the case. He developed a strategy early on to deal with discomfort, alcohol, and alcohol became the thing he's going to do. When he drank, he felt relaxed and able to engage. Now treated and sober for several years, he still has a trace of social anxiety and still wishes for a drink in anticipation and socializing. This is Armand DeMille with you. By the way, our phone number here is 212-957-2729. And we are taking your call. What more do you know about this? Go ahead.
Well, I wonder what you think the difference is between boys and girls, because I see a lot of anxious girls, and there's kind of an epidemic of cutting and different behaviors that are really in response to the anxiety, I think, that comes for them crossing over into adulthood.
People don't understand cutting. They don't understand what that's about. But it's very clear. A person feels anxious. They want to quell the anxiety. They do cutting. Cutting gives them endorphins, and it makes them feel better.
Do you think girls are more likely to be anxious during adolescence? How does this play out for them? We were talking about the difference between men and women.
It would seem that the male would be have a higher level of risk-taking behaviors than the female. Because by nature, you know, the male would be born to get out there and do more risky thing. What do you think, Julian?
Well, yeah, I mean, among the research that I was doing earlier, we found that men are more likely to enjoy taking risks than women. And this was due to men just always being the hunters and the explorers, and women in this prehistoric era having stayed close to the children and caring for them in obviously a less risky way.
As we were young, back of the savannah, for example, we would have learned that the rustle in the grass of a sudden flight of birds may have signaled a predator. We may have known if we were out there in the, you know, hunting around, and then suddenly we saw a bunch of birds popping out of somewhere, we may have said, well, there's a predator here. You know, there's some kind of a predator around, and that helps us get away. If we had not developed this kind of barometer for knowing where danger is, for being nervous, we would have become lunch. You know, we would have been dissolved a long time ago. So it is important to be able to respond to threatening situations. The hallmark of any anxiety disorder is the persistence of a danger signal. See, it feels like a danger signal. Now, why risk-taking behavior? Because you want to do anything to quell that. Nervous people take risks. Manic people take risks. Most depressed people don't take risks.
Right, because it's almost impossible to have any sense of agency when you're, any sense of action when you're depressed.
So the people that are cutting, are those people depressed or are they anxious?
Anxious.
So it's not a depression that actually fuels that, because they wouldn't even want to take that risk in the first place.
Well, they may want to. You know, there could be a depression and an anxiety, Julian, at the same time. But it is the anxiety specifically, it's the nervousness that makes
that
a person do things.
Seek relief.
What do you find in the teenagers that you work with?
I mean, I think it's there's a kind of an unmanageable set of feelings that go along with becoming an adolescent. And, I mean, I never looked at it neurologically. I look at it more as, you know, having all of this sense of competence and all of this sense of wanting to do things, desire, without any sense of control or power. So there's this, you know, they're always fighting with themselves just to be able to get through what it is they are feeling.
I have found as I got older, I found less need for risk, not more avoidance of risk. But less need for risk. And for example, you know, there's a program on television called The Shark Tank, which is about investing. And the investors say very clearly, I don't want to risk my money. I want to invest my money. When I was younger, if somebody came along with an idea and said, hey, give me some of your money so we can follow this idea, I'd throw it right in there for a risk. Nowadays, if somebody comes over and says, I have this idea, give me some money, I say, wait, how are we going to make this work?
So what does that say about risk-taking over the life cycle? So does it matter your years on Earth?
I may have needed to have risk always so that I could always have my earning potential, because I could always keep moving forward and forward and forward. I don't feel that need anymore. I feel like, you know, a much slower pace is fine by me. Never remaining stagnant, but still moving forward. Now, there are certain people who take risks all the time. There are sexual risks. You know, there are sexual risks that people take. There are risks with disease. There are risks with health. There are people who smoke cigarettes who are taking a risk. I mean, some of them may never get sick. I know that's hard to believe, but it's true.
But statistically, most of them will be sick in one way or another.
Yes, and some will not. Mm-hmm. And my great-grandfather, who smoked cigarettes until he was 106, you know, and died from something else completely. So there will always be somebody whose risk-taking has been rewarded, and risk-taking does get rewarded, as you could see from most of the sports and the soldiers and, the, you know, wherever you see a hero. 212-957-2729. What risks have you taken in your life? What risks have you taken? What risk have you taken that has gotten you from one spot to another? Do you remember a particular risk that you wish you hadn't taken and a risk that you're glad you did? Let's think about that for a minute. You got one that you're glad you took? How about professionally? You could have been a house painter.
Well, I mean, I guess the life choice to just go to school and study an artistic field is a risk in itself. But I've kind of always accepted that as the risk that was part of my life.
Yes, and part of what you've chosen with acting, when you've chosen to be an actor, it's constant risk. It's almost like a thrill going on an audition, knowing that you may be turned down at any given point. No?
And then there's something so rewarding with that risk at the same time, because I go into an office or for this audition and I wait for that moment. I take my risk, I go there, I'm vulnerable, and I give them what I have, and then I have to wait, and hopefully that risk pays off.
And it does a couple of times, right?
Yes, it has a couple
times. One time you got a TV series, another time, now you're doing a commercial.
And now I'm doing a little movie.
And you're doing a movie also?
A little thing.
You got a role in a movie too? Amazing. Hey, we've got Kerry on the line, 212-957-2729. Hello, Kerry, it's Armand DeMille.
Hey, Armand, how are you doing?
Good.
I hope I'm not cooling you too much.
No.
You always have such good subjects. I wanted to just tell you that recently, I'm in my 40s. Recently, I went to a place where there was supposed to be a band playing, right? So I went and I ran into these people that, they're like, it's a lot of bikers at this place. Like, it's kind of like almost scary to go in, almost like feeling like you're on a movie set. Like, mm-hmm. This place can't exist in New Jersey, my goodness, right? But it's so interesting because while I was there, I swear to God, I'm in my 40s, right? Almost 50, right? I've seen people that I knew from back in high school. And when you say risk takers, these would be the risk taking type that, on the bikes and a certain lifestyle, right? They looked great. They look better than people that I know that, watch their fiber and take all their vitamins. And I have to tell you, there's something to this risk-taking for people that live a certain lifestyle that are happy with it.
Well, Kerry, let's take it to another place. You're talking about them. Think about the excitement you felt when you were there among them.
Yeah.
Think about the excitement you
right.
felt, not just what they would, how you observed them. You felt alive as if for the first time in a long time.
Yes, but what's strange is these people look better than me. Like, I've aged. They don't look like they've aged at all.
I know.
It's amazing.
Still talking about you and your experience of yourself.
I did. You're right. It's absolutely correct.
Now, what part of your life, Kerry, do you consider mundane?
Oh, gosh. Most of it.
Really?
Yeah, well, my son moved out. I'm alone again. I'm starting life over in a certain sense. I'm at a certain age. My job, I work from home. It's kind of, I travel sometimes around the country to meet people, but I don't know. It's not, I guess life does become mundane. I've started taking some sailing lessons. That's kind of fun.
But how about the dating world? How do you play risk and safety in the dating world?
Well, I avoid it nowadays.
That's playing pretty safe.
Yeah, I have. I've avoided it for a while. As I mentioned, I've gotten older and I've gotten heavier.
Why is that, Kerry?
I'm not feeling as, great as maybe someone who wants to get out there. You know what I mean?
So you feel like your body is out of shape and nobody would really want you and you don't want to get out there and feel that disappointment.
Yes.
Of the rejections. He'd rather not take risks, which is like so many people feel that way. I'd rather not risk it. I'd rather not do it. I'd rather stay home and keep my own security. But then every now and then, they bring you to a little place in New Jersey where there are motorcycles. And you can hear the broom broom lights up something inside of you. And you say, wait a minute. You're not just talking about how good they are. You're talking about a missing piece of you. No matter what your weight, I don't know if you've seen some, I've seen some bikers who weigh near 300 pounds. They do fine.
Yeah, Yeah, they don't seem to worry. Like, I did notice they had women with them, and some of them were heavy, and but I don't know. It's a different lifestyle, and you're talking about risk-taking, and it got me to thinking that people who, continue some form of risk-taking for many years, that, you know, to some degree, I don't know if it's endorphins or chemistry or, you know, because these are not people who are taking their, you know, they're not listening to Gary Null, not taking their vitamin, you know, they're not those types, let's face it, you know, but I mean, I have to say they look great. And
you keep in mind, the whole reason we have gambling casinos is because people want to feel that risk. They have the racetracks, it's because most sports are all about some experience of that. If you were to watch during these soccer matches or football matches, if you were to watch the endorphins floating through an entire country when somebody kicks a goal, you know, and you could see somebody, if you observe it on television, you'll see, like, you know, there'll be 10,000 people in an audience.
Yeah.
And then somebody scores one goal, and the entire group has a flood of endorphins, like one huge orgasm. And I really mean it. I mean, it's like it's gigantic. It's almost obscene how big it is, you know, and then, fabulous. And then they kind of calm down and make sure it's not going to be taken away. It's kind of amazing.
What is that about? I have noticed that.
It's about our need for that is what we're talking about. And I think there's one need that you have, Kerry. Is your business at all successful, your business at home?
It has its highs and its lows, so sometimes I do better than other, you know, so it just depends.
So how long is it going to take you to buy a motorcycle?
Oh, I would never do that.
Oh, I would. Never?
No. Well,
how about ride on a
maybe
motorcycle?
Maybe on the back I could ride.
Yeah, how about riding on the back of a motorcycle?
My driving's not the best in a car.
Yeah. Even a motor scooter. Any part of it. It seems that there's a part of you that's dying to be free, you know, and you're looking at it and other people doing it, and there's a piece of you that just wants to feel it.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You must be close, otherwise you wouldn't be calling. You know? Thank you so much for calling in, Kerry.
Have a nice day. Thanks.
Thank you.
Armand.
So is there a piece of each one of us that feel this way? Is there a part of you that feels kind of caught in the supplements, you know, in the fiber, in the doing everything properly? So it's we get stuck in it. And then there's some piece of us that says, I've got to be able to take a chance. I've got to be able to do this. Because the risks that we think about taking are really not big risks at all. I've got to take a chance about talking to that person I want to talk to, about saying something that I would be afraid of saying. Now, most people I have found who are afraid to take risks usually have difficulty in expressing their feelings directly towards their parents, especially negative feelings. When a person has difficulty communicating with their parents and they feel a lot of judgment from a parent, usually they're inhibited as far as their risk potential goes. So that's what we find psychologically. We find that that's a thing. We're going to be taking a short break and bring you something really special. And then after we take that break, we'll come back and take more of your phone calls at 212-957-2729. We'll be back with you in just a minute.
Short jumping and the cotton is nothing can harm you. With daddy and mammy standing by.
That's Billie Holiday singing Summertime, which we thought would be appropriate for today on this very warm summer day. And that's something out there. Oof, it's really beautiful. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We were going to have, and we're going to have next week, a guest who specializes in adolescence. I've been trying to understand adolescence, and luckily the New York Times Sunday section brings us an article about anxiety and about risk-taking, from which some of this material has come. Now, this there's a few other things that we've done in our research, but the one about the adolescence is the most fascinating to me. It's what happens to you. What happened to you as a teenager? Do you remember your own risk-taking abilities, and do you miss it? Hey, we've got Angel on the air. Hi, Angel. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello, Mr. DeMille. How are you? Good afternoon. I'm actually very, very proud and a longtime fan of yours and happy to get on the air.
Oh, nice, Angel. Thank you. And call me Armand, please.
Okay.
Is that a radio in the background?
No, that's my work phone.
Oh, that's your other phone with the... Yeah.
I'm just very happy to... Well, actually, I'm calling in reference to the last caller's response or her comment.
Yes.
And I think she should take the leap, like I have done in a matter of 3 years into the motorcycle community. It's a wonderful thing. I mean, I myself have never been a major risk taker. But... I mean, and I've always only taken very careful risks, calculated risks, so to speak. But I think she certainly should delve.
Well, forget about her for a minute, Angel. Let me ask you something. Could you tell me about your experience? This getting a motorcycle and riding around in a motorcycle, which I kind of admire because I kind of love, you know, the idea of speed against you. The only thing I don't like is the noise factor. But what have you found with a motorcycle that has such meaning to you? Besides the fact that you're an angel and it makes you fly.
Well, I would have to say, first, I would have to say it's the camaraderie.
Okay, there's a brotherhood. Yes. Yes, there is.
The camaraderie and just the thrill of being almost completely exposed, you know, with something that you can... Only you can enjoy that way.
And it's changed your life.
Yeah, it's been very pleasurable.
Let me ask you, did your life change before you embraced the motorcycle, or did your life change as a result of embracing the motorcycle? It must have changed before, otherwise you would have never taken the risk.
Yeah, I was in a marriage for 14 years and just a robot through the marriage and to work. And, And I got divorced, and I met my new wife, of 10 years, and she's encouraged me in everything I do.
Wow, how lucky for you. How lucky for you, how nice for you. Angel, thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you so much, Mr. DeMille.
Sure.
I have to say, Mr. DeMille, I know no other way. Enjoy your day.
Okay, thank you, Angel. Thank you, Mr. Angel. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Some of these folks are just so beautiful. So taking a risk and being able to take risks is something that seems to be vital in life. Our telephone number, 212-957-2729. Here's a, well, let's take one more caller, then I'll read this thing to you. 212-957-2729. We have only a single line coming in nowadays. Let me read you this. Tell him to call me on the other number, okay, so we can speak. I have somebody who calls who wants to speak personally. The mind is a coward. For those who listen to it become utterly cowardly. The mind is not an adventurer. It's very cautious. It takes every step with thinking and calculation until it's certain there is no risk. That's almost the ideal of our society. The ideal of our society is stop taking risks. Nail it down, secure. Until it has seen others taking risk. Until it has seen others taking the step and there has been no danger. Hence, listening to the mind is one of the most disturbing phenomena of growth. If you listen to your mind, it's going to keep you frightened. When everything is good, the mind comes in and says, watch out, watch out. Because you listen to the mind's fears, you stop living. The mind would keep you always the same, never taking risks. Newness itself, something new, is the enemy to the mind. Sameness is its friend. So to you, my friends, Osho says, to laugh is to risk appearing a fool. To weep is to risk appearing sentimental. To reach out is to risk involvement. To expose feelings is to risk rejection. To place your dreams before the crowd is to risk ridicule. To love is to risk not being loved in return. And to go forward in the face of overwhelming odds is to risk failure. But risks must be taken because the greatest hazard of life is to risk nothing. The person who risks nothing, does nothing, has nothing, is nothing. You may avoid suffering and sorrow, but you cannot learn, feel, change, grow, or love. Chained by certitudes, you are only a slave. Only the person who can take a risk is free. That's by Osho. Powerful stuff, isn't it?
Yes.
Talk to me about romantic risk and your clients and romantic risk. Do they get so afraid that they don't take chances anymore? By the way, our number here is 212-957-2729.
Absolutely. That's based on their experience, right? Past experience of being hurt, or I think in a lot of cases, being deceived by themselves. You know, taking a risk in the wrong person, in the wrong way. And once having been burned, not wanting to risk it again.
So what do you do? Do you encourage them to keep taking risks?
Yes, absolutely. I think that one of the most difficult and most valuable things a person can do is to try to remain open and receptive to what is out in the world for you and who comes your way, what comes your way.
But if you make the same mistake and get hurt over and over again,
well, therapy is, part of it is supposed to be to learn what it is that takes you where you've gone and to be more thoughtful in your approach to what comes next. Not so thoughtful that you don't do anything, but thoughtful enough so that you make different choices or you recognize when something is familiar in a bad way.
Well, you know, that kind of goes back to what they were saying about the development of the adolescent. So therefore, for many people, anxiety runs their lives, makes them make choices, makes them run about doing things, and the prefrontal cortex is not very active. The reasoning part is not very active. It becomes active. I guess that's part of what therapy does.
I would say so.
It helps you find the more reasonable part of yourself so that you can have both the excitement, right?
Yes.
And the calmness at the same time.
Yes.
Another caller on the line, Luca, 212-957-2729. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Luca from 10 years old. I love your show. I listen to it every day.
Good. I could barely hear you. Are you talking on a speakerphone, on a cell phone?
No, I'm not on speakerphone.
You're 10 years old?
Yes, and I love your show.
So whoever introduced you to listening to this program?
You said this what I used to say, but I was going to say that when I was at my summer camp for skateboarding.
I wish I could hear you better. When you were at summer camp for skateboarding, somebody was listening to my program?
And there was this giant ramp that's about, like, 2 stories tall. It's called the Mini Mega Ramp. It's huge.
Yes.
And the whole time I wanted to do it, and I was really scared to do it. And finally I built up the courage, and I took the risk, and I did it.
And how did that feel, Lucas?
It was really scary, but I did it, and I nailed it. And I was so happy that I didn't eat because all my friends told me not to do it.
Oh, it's so difficult
so
to hear.
But I did it, and I landed it.
Well, Lucas, I want to thank you very much for calling. What are you calling me from? Are you calling me from a cell phone or a regular phone?
A cell phone.
A cell phone, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's very hard to hear you speaking, and I would love to talk to you more. If you could call us from a different phone, it would be great, because there's a few questions I want to ask you.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. 212-957-2729. Did you want to say something, Alicia?
Yeah, but we were just talking about how people change. I think this is another example of that, and starting very young. Taking a risk and having the experience of it being wonderful, scary and wonderful, is something that you kind of put in your vault of experiences. And then the next time you are faced with that, you remember that and you go forward.
I didn't hear you.
I have had the same experience with my son around skiing, and I think those experiences become a collection of things that you keep with you and that motivate you to go forward and take more risks. I wish Lucas would call back.
212-957-2729. Yes, who is it? So let's take a call. This is Armand DeMille. Oh, sometimes we got to do hand signals in here. I think we have Ivan on the line. Ivan, is that you?
Yes. Hi. Hi, Armand.
Hi there, Ivan. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, no problem. You know something? I'm 42 years old. And I completely identify with the young man, the skateboarder that called in just a few moments ago.
Oh, you heard him clearly. I was a little worried about whether he would get across the air or not.
Yeah, well, I got the gist of his story because I'm a BMX freestyle rider. And when we go to the skate parks and different spots, we see all the skaters there at the same spots doing the same thing but on skateboards. And I picked up this, like, when I was the young man's age. I was riding my BMX bike at 10 years old around my neighborhood. And, you know, later on when I got into high school, I was trying out the regular football, baseball, basketball, whatever. I never really gravitated toward that but the bike was calling me, and that's what I did all through high school. And so I did, go to school, come home, ride, study, sleep, and do it all over again for about 3 years after my freshman year. And
Let me ask you a question. What risk are you currently afraid to take in your love life?
In my love life? Well, I'm married.
Yeah.
You know.
So what is it about you?
My love life? No, I mean, my wife and I, we've been together 16 years. And,
yeah, good. So what do you need to change in that relationship?
Well, she knows me through and through. And she knows before we even connected that this is what I do. I ride the bike, I snowboard, and whatever I do, just to get that rush you were talking about. But she would much want me to focus on business so I could have the money coming in that we'd like to, to live our life as a family, and I'm really starting to focus on that, right now. I mean, more so than anything, but I'm a little afraid of, giving up,
the freedom.
Boyhood fun that really turned me on and waked me, really turned me on and, made life exuberant,
Well, that's kind of interesting.
One of the things. I'm going to do the whole other thing because I have to do it, but what I really want to do is ride the bike, go away snowboarding, and jump, and be up in the air, and to get that rush to let me know that I'm still alive in the midst of, your mundane adult responsibilities.
Well, you see, now this is what people say about young men, or many men like you, still being adolescents in many ways, women too. We are adolescents in many ways, and by that we mean the development of the amygdala, which is firing like wild and saying, do something, calm me down, let me take a chance, let me do something, and not yet developing the center of reasoning that happens in the prefrontal cortex. It doesn't dominate. Then you get married to someone, and after a period of time, you have a relationship, and she becomes the center of reasoning, and a part of you hates her for it. It hates having to do this, but realizes this is the right thing to do. So some part of you needs to show the appreciation, even though you feel the resistance. Do you know what I'm talking about, Ivan?
Not cool. I mean, I'm getting the gist of what you're saying, but I'm not very well versed on neuroscience. So
you're going to settle down. You're going to settle down to being a businessman for your family's sake, right?
Well, yeah, I got to hustle. I got to make the coin. The mortgage needs to be paid and whatever else, and the children need whatever they need and so forth. But I don't wish to neglect myself in the process in that regard.
Well, your relationship, it seems like, gives you a balance. So you have the impulse to take all these risks, and you have this person who's helping you to also be reasonable and keep yourself and your family afloat. That's not uncommon in relationships, and I think can be very useful.
Yeah, well, we're definitely working on striking that balance and making the proper compromises, in order to, keep our family together and, live our lives as well as we possibly can. But, I don't think there's anything wrong with the kid in you alive and a lot. Keeping the kid in you alive and well,
that's right.
And while doing so, handling all of your adult responsibilities,
I see
some of my peers who have given up what they've loved in the past, and I've seen them after many years, and I was like, wow, what happened? You used to be an athlete. You used to be this. Look at you. I mean, you're not alive. I used to do that. And the other guys and I that are around about my age, you still ride and still do this. We all share the same stories about, I'm glad I took the path and continue to do what I love because look at our peers. Look at them. They've gained a whole bunch of weight. They've lost their vibrance, just to do what they love to do. You remember them when, and now you see them now, and you say to yourself, wow, I don't want to become that. Let me continue to do what I'm doing for me so I can be better for my family to take care of all of those other responsibilities that need to happen in your adult life,
Ivan, it's tough to do both, and I celebrate your willingness. Congratulations, yeah. And thank you for calling in.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate sure. It. Great show. Love it. Now, something before we go, it seems like I've gotten a postgraduate degree just by listening to your show alone.
thank you.
Thank you.
And I think about Lucas. listening at 10 years old.
Amazing.
Amazing, right? So he's one of our, he's listening on his own. He's got nobody around. And he's listening to the program. What do they do? What makes him do that at 10? You know, well, he's 10 years old and he's just at that adolescent stage and he's listening and he wants to talk and he wants to join us on the air. How precocious.
How wonderful. I imagine it would be explaining a lot of things that he's going through in the world and that he sees around him.
I'd like to get him back. We'll maybe learn something from him. 212-957-2729. I think we have time for one more caller. Christina, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, this is a pleasure. I talk, listen to you often, but I've never called. I'm over 70, and I took a risk this summer. I'm terribly afraid of deep water, but I've always wanted to go and be in with dolphins. And I sat by the pool with the instructors for about 3 hours and looked at it. And I finally went into a very deep pool and was with the dolphins. And it was so wonderful.
Wow. Where was this? Where did this take
this
place?
Was
Florida?
In Portland, Oregon.
In Portland, Oregon.
Oh, it was wonderful. And I believe that for me, I make a resolution to take one risk a year or do something very exciting that I'm afraid of. Like I go skiing, but the first time I get on the slope, I'm scared. I say, why am I doing this to myself? Why am I doing this? But then after half an hour, I feel free as a bird.
So, Christina, you've taken these kind of risks in your life, and there was a whole time you were just holding back. Do you ever understand why you were so afraid of the deep water?
I have taken swimming lessons from I was 20. Never given up, but I still am have afraid. I have talked it over with therapists, and I have been hypnotized around it. It hasn't worked so far.
Do you also ride a bicycle? Do you know how to ride a
yes,
bicycle?
Yes, I ride, and I yell, and I sing, and I love it.
What do you sing when you sing?
I sing Irish songs that I remember from my childhood, and I just yell and do Om.
What's an Irish song that you remember from childhood?
Oh, my name is McNamara. I can't sing, but I...
Come on, we've got 1 minute. Why don't you take a risk, and for the first time, you're going to sing an Irish song on radio. And
oh,
then,
my God, help us all.
Here we go. Are you ready?
Oh, sure.
All right. Come on, Christina.
Oh, my name is McNamara. I'm the leader of the band. Although we're few, we're number boys. We're the best men in the land. Hip-a-bip-bip, hip-a-bip-bip, up-a-bip-a-lira, hip-a-bip-bip. That's all I can remember because I'm nervous. I'm on the radio.
Yeah. Well, you get back the archives. That'll be at our website, thepositivemind.com, and you'll be able to hear yourself sing. I think your voice was beautiful, and I appreciate you taking the risk with us.
Well, thank you. What do you suggest I do for my fear of deep water?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. There's something about the fear of the unknown. There's probably an association with the unknown itself that's somehow locked into the deep water. But I don't think I could go into it without asking you a whole bunch of questions. Maybe we should do that not online.
All right.
You know, not on the radio, because it's going to take a whole bunch of questions to find out what you have connected to it.
I would like that.
Nice to speak with you, Christina. Nice
My
to hear
pleasure
from you.
And honor. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
All right. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We do have to be going. We're the kind of people to get off air 5 minutes before our next hour. So we can't take any more calls, but we will tomorrow. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Special thanks to Lisa Arnone, Julian Joyello. Thanks for the research, guys.
Thank you.
Really fun to be here.
And to the New York Times. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Bye-bye for now.
It's like a summer day, silent, cause there's just too much to say. Still and warm and peaceful, even clouds that may drift by can't disturb our summer sky. I'll take summer, that's my time of year. Winter shadows seem to disappear.
such a happy season. That's the reason I can say that I love a summer day. I hear laughter from the swimming hole,
kids out fishing with a willow pole,
boats come drifting round the bend. Why must summer ever
thank you.